Your host tonight is the eating disorder pro, Dr. J. Renee Norton. She comes to you live from Cincinnati, Ohio, home of the Bengals, the Reds, and of course, the Norton Center for Eating Disorders. If you or a loved one is struggling with obesity, anorexia, bulimia, emotional eating, or if you're just worried about food pollution, then you'll want to unhook and tune in.
Good evening, and welcome to the Eating Disorder Pro Show. Thank you for joining us. As you may recall, or probably know, this is part two of the Sunshine Diet series. Last week, we talked about cholesterol, what it is, how important it is, and what are the ranges for, and what the ranges are for the various types of cholesterol. We said that we were describing the Sunshine Diet, and you are probably wondering where the sunshine is in all of this. Well, this week, we're going to talk about cholesterol sulfate, which is a form of cholesterol that the heart has to have in order to beat. The entire cholesterol system is designed to make this happen. After all, if the heart doesn't beat, we don't last very long. What most people don't know is that cholesterol sulfate can only be obtained from sunlight, more specifically UVB light, which is part of the spectrum of light that we get from the sun. And that's why we're calling this series the Sunshine Diet. So, as I mentioned, we talked about cholesterol last time. We did, I think, a pretty good job of describing the types of the different types of cholesterol, the ranges that you had to pay attention to, and so forth. This week, however, we are going to talk about a special type of cholesterol and why it's so important to us. And that type of cholesterol is cholesterol sulfate, and this is the type of cholesterol that we actually do get from sunlight. More specifically, the UVB range of sunlight, which is part of the spectrum that we get in the sunshine that we get every day. When it is absorbed in the skin through exposure to the sun, it produces the critically important cholesterol sulfate. What I'm going to start with, and I thought about saving this to the end, but I decided that in order to get your attention right away, I would just go ahead and start with this. And that is, in these first two slides, I want you to check out the test results that I had 8 weeks ago, and this is an these are the test results from an endopat. So in the first slide, you can see that the an endopat is a test that measures the functionality of the lining of the heart and blood vessels. And a score of 1.67 or less is high risk. A score of 1.67 to 2.09 is intermediate risk. And a score greater than 2.1 is considered to be very healthy. Now notice in the next slide, this is the first test that I did 8 weeks ago, and you can see that my score is 1.45. Not good. This would put me in the high-risk category. However, if you look at the next slide, you will see that just 8 short weeks later, my score has doubled to a 3.04. So let's just see what the company that makes the endopat machine has to say about the ranges. In the next slide, you'll notice there is the red zone, which is 1.68 and lower, as I mentioned earlier. You do know, according to this company that makes the endopat machine, you do not have proper endothelial function. And this could be an important signal of an imminent cardiac problem. An imminent cardiac problem. That is very scary, especially for me, because I think of myself as very, very healthy. However, Itamar and the company that makes this particular product probably knows a lot better, according to their research. So I'm going to accept that a score of less than 1.68, and my score was 1.545, was really risky. In the yellow zone, the score between 1.69 and 2.0, your endothelium is healthy, and while you don't have any additional risk, you're still not in the well-protected green zone. It's vitally important that you take charge of your own health and do everything you can to improve your endo score. Good health depends on lifestyle changes, including what you eat, how active you are, whether or not you smoke, the precautions you take to avoid injuries and accidents, and how you deal with tension and anxiety. Finally, the green zone. score between 2.1 and 3. Your endothelium is functioning optimally, and you have maximum protection. Keep up whatever it is that you are doing, because the foods that you have been eating and the physical activity that you have been getting is working for you. A number also working for you in a way to reduce your risk factors, especially the risk factors implicated in vascular health and longevity in general, particularly blood cholesterol levels, hypertension, and obesity. And you can see that the research is noted at the bottom of that slide. All right, so my score went from 1.45 to 3.04. The person doing my test looked at me when she read my score, because actually when we started the test, she said, "I really think you're repeating this test way too early. We don't recommend repeating it earlier than 3 months, and it's only 8 weeks. And really, ideally, you would wait 6 months." And so when she saw the results, her first reaction was, "What? How did you do that? What have you been doing?" I told her she probably wouldn't believe me if I told her, but I did tell her. I tried to explain it to her. Because really, in a nutshell, what I was doing was just simply laying out in the sun or using a UVB lamp to get a little bit of sunshine. That's essentially what I was doing differently. So how is this possible? Changing the plaque buildup in 8 weeks from at risk to really good. It's all about the amazing form of cholesterol that no one except Dr. Stephanie Seneff, senior research scientist at MIT Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory, seemed to be talking about. We're going to meet Dr. Seneff in 2 weeks. She's going to be on the show, and I've got a list of questions. I hope you do the same thing. Write down your questions as you listen to this Blog Talk Radio show with the Eating Disorder Pro, and when the time comes, we will do everything we can to answer all of your questions. All right, so what we're talking about is something called cholesterol sulfate. We talked about a lot of different types of sulfate last week, but this is one that we didn't talk about, and apparently a lot of people are not talking about. It's a form of cholesterol made in the skin when the skin is exposed to the sun. It's needed in order for the heart to beat, and it's also an integral part of the neural transmission in the brain. That seems really important, doesn't it? We need it for our hearts to beat, and we need it for our brains to work. Without these two functions, we are either brain dead or dead all over. According to Dr. Stephanie Seneff, cholesterol sulfate supplies oxygen, sulfur, cholesterol, energy, and negative charge, as you can see from the next slide. Oxygen, sulfur, cholesterol, energy, and negative charge to all the cells. And negative charge doesn't sound like a good thing, but it's actually a really good thing. Cells need negative charge, and we talked about that a little bit last week. As I mentioned last week, it is cholesterol that separates us from plants and bacteria, because our cells can communicate, whereas non-human cells, like plants and bacteria, are unable to perform this function. And communication is everything, whether it's in your marriage or in your body. Communication is really, really important. Throughout the book, we have talked about leaky gut. I'm sorry. Throughout my work, I am in the process of finishing up my book, Below the Radar, How Food Pollution is Driving Obesity, Eating Disorders, Premature Aging, and Chronic Illness in the U.S. And this actually is the addendum, one of the addendums for the book. However, I am multi-purposing here and using it as one of the Blog Talk Radio shows, so forgive me. But in any case, throughout my career for the last 4 or 5 years, since I began working on the book, I have talked about leaky gut or the hyperpermeability of the gut. And for those of you who follow me on Blog Talk Radio and Twitter and Facebook, you know that we do a lot of work in this area. Cholesterol defines the permeability or the fluidity of the body's membrane, all of them. In this sense, you could say that cholesterol determines gut permeability, skin permeability, and the integrity of any barrier in the body. It's really and truly the glue that seems to hold us together. So just to summarize, cholesterol is the chief substance, and you'll see this on the slide, in the myelin sheath that insulates the nervous system so there aren't any short circuits in the brain. Cholesterol is key for digestion. It's the precursor to bile acids, which are needed for mixing fats and water together. Cholesterol is the mother of all hormones, steroid hormones, including glucocorticosteroids, mineralocorticoids, and sex hormones. There. Cholesterol also helps in managing blood sugar, blood pressure, mineral balance, and everything steroid hormones do. Cholesterol is a powerful protector against invaders, bacteria, protozoa, fungi, worms, viruses, etc. It does this by first creating a shield in the skin or in the gut or in the membrane. And then, as a part of the Trojan horse system that we talked about last week, HDL comes in and manages any of these insults or any of these threats in a way that's truly extraordinary. And finally, cholesterol handles glucose by creating a system that prevents glycation. And we talked about this a little bit last week. Glycation is the process that damages protein. So cholesterol does a lot. And it is really a perfect design. It's what we need to move, to think, to live, to breathe, to digest our food. Every biological function gets involved. Getting it where it needs to be or transporting it is vitally important. How is it going to navigate through a body which is 70% water when it is not water soluble? That's a huge, huge biological problem. Since cholesterol is a fat, it has to have fats to transport it, unless it has a sulfate. Because attaching sulfate to cholesterol creates a molecule which is both water-soluble and fat-soluble. Excuse me. The addition of sulfur allows cholesterol to travel with almost no barriers. This is the coolest thing. Now, cholesterol doesn't need a fat, and that means it's much less likely to raise cholesterol levels in the body. Once it gets inside the cell, where it needs to be, wherever that is, in whatever part of the body or whatever system, it splits and the cholesterol goes and does its magic in the membranes and sulfate goes to the cytoplasm. So it's just this perfect system as long as it has the sulfate. So all this magic depends upon getting enough cholesterol sulfate. Without the sulfate, the cholesterol has to get a ride or hitch a ride on a fat. And the easiest fat to ride is the one that is the most damaged, or the LDL cholesterol. Contrary to popular belief, it isn't just the amount of LDL cholesterol. It is really the quality of the LDL cholesterol that causes plaque buildup. Remember, we said that there are a lot of things that damage fats: polluted foods, bad fat, heavy metals, herbicides, insecticides, microbes, GMOs, sugar, and so on. Those things all damage our fats. And the LDL cholesterol is what transports the damaged fat. So the cholesterol that we need in the body, obviously the body can't use damaged fats. It has to use good fats, but it has to travel. The easiest way to travel, and I don't really understand this, but apparently the easiest way to travel is to hitch a ride with the damaged fats. Maybe the healthy fats are doing their own thing, and they're not as available because they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. But the damaged fats are hanging out, and that's how the cholesterol has to get where it's going if it doesn't have sulfate. All right. So how do we obtain the cholesterol sulfate? To really understand how this works, you have to also understand the connection between cholesterol, sulfur, and vitamin D, all of which are impacted by exposure to the sun. So you can see on the slide that there is a process that happens. And number one, the skin gets sulfur dioxide from the air, and it converts it into sulfate. By the way, just for those of you who like to garden, you get a lot of sulfur on your feet if you garden without your shoes on, or if you're like me and you garden with your clogs on and the dirt always and the mud always mushes into your under your toes and into your clogs. So, but that's a good thing. That's a good thing. That's another really good source of sulfur. Number two, sulfate converts energy into cholesterol sulfate when the skin is exposed to the sun. And number three, cholesterol sulfate eventually gets oxidized as a means of protecting us from UVB radiation, which then transforms it into vitamin D3 sulfate. Now, I know we have talked about vitamin D3, and this just blows me away that right from the get-go, right from the beginning, vitamin D3's job apparently is to protect us. Without the transformation into vitamin D3, we would get really badly burned. So no wonder a vitamin D deficiency is predictive of so many illnesses. In this next slide, this is just a correlation, but it's an interesting correlation. That's actually was done by an engineer. He's not a doctor. He's just an engineer who had a vitamin D deficiency. And what he looked at were all of the problems that have increased and that may or may not be related to vitamin D, but they have increased as long at the same period in time, at the same period of time that we are seeing such an increase in vitamin D3 deficiency. So notice in this slide that diabetes has increased 66%, overweight children 150%, bipolar disorder 4,400%. Let me read that again. Bipolar disorder 4,400%. Are you kidding me? What are some of the other ones? Lyme disease, rickets, of course, because of vitamin D deficiency. Knee injuries in teens. That's because they don't get enough calcium. Without the vitamin D, you don't get the calcium. Pulmonary hypertension, which is on point with our show this evening, and so on and so forth. Autism, multiple sclerosis, tuberculosis, breast cancer, 110%. That's just amazing to me. So although those are not, that is not a causal relationship, I want to hasten to say that this gentleman's observation is simply that these things have really increased a lot as vitamin D deficiencies have increased as well. Vitamin D3, a lot of people don't understand this, is actually a steroid because it carries a lot of messages and even manages gene expression and cellular behavior. Once it's formed, it's transported to the liver, and from there it goes to the kidney. And in the kidneys, it gets activated. At this point, it is in the form of 1,25-dihydroxyvitamin D. Vitamin D can also be activated in the immune system, which is really interesting, in the prostate, in the breast, in the colon, in the lung, in the brain, and in the skin cell. Okay, I can't help it. I just cannot resist. To me, this is another like, what? This is another huge aha for me. So maybe this is why vitamin D deficiency appears to be involved in so many of the diseases that are currently on the rise, many of which are affecting these very organs and systems. I mean, I don't think it takes a brain surgeon to figure out that there's probably a connection, since vitamin D gets activated in those systems. In any case, we definitely need more research in this area. This is just so important, and thank heaven for people like Dr. Senoff and Dr. Mercola, who is featuring Dr. Senoff in his work a lot these days. Okay, so anyway, back to work. Although the kidneys activate and release vitamin D into the bloodstream, the rest of the cells in the body can also activate vitamin D. So apparently every single cell in the body regulates its own sunshine, activating it, discarding it as needed, et cetera, while the bloodstream keeps kind of a base level of inactivated vitamin D on hand all the time. So every cell can use activated vitamin D. The rest of the body, the bloodstream, keeps a base level of inactivated vitamin D. Whoever designed this really knew what they were doing. This is just truly amazing, pure genius. A system that is always got a supply of what it needs. The implication for testing vitamin D levels, though, are that you shouldn't test for the activated vitamin D. That's 1,25 dehydroxyvitamin D. The better test is circulating inactive, which is 25 hydroxy D. So when you order the test, or when your doctor orders the test for you, make sure that they order the right test. Okay, following along on the in the slides, you'll see that vitamin D3 hydroxy ranges are maximum level. If you go above this, it can be toxic. Is 100 milligrams to 150. Optimal is about 50 to 70. That's where most people are saying today that we should be with our vitamin D3. And a deficient level is anything less than 50. Okay, so when I did my EndoPat 8 weeks ago, my vitamin D levels were 22. I had them retested the other day when I went in for the second EndoPat, and I am absolutely certain that with only 8 weeks of being out in the sun, which affords you about 10,000 IU of vitamin D with only a half an hour of sunshine, I bet my vitamin D levels are somewhere between 50 and 70. I'll be really surprised if they're not, and I should get my vitamin D levels back before we have Dr. Seneff on. I think I get the results the same day that she is going to be on the show with me, so I am pretty confident that I'm going to be in good shape by the time we have this show. Now, understand that my vitamin D levels started going down when I stopped laying out in the sun about 4 or 5 years ago, and I supplemented with vitamin D3 to the tune of about 10,000 IU per dose, per day. And initially, I got a little bit of a rise in vitamin D3, but ultimately, it went back down again and it wouldn't budge. And there is a reason for that. Because there's a difference between vitamin D3 sulfate and vitamin D3, the supplement. Vitamin D3 sulfate, the one that gets created in the skin upon exposure to the sun, is a sophisticated, water-soluble, and fat-soluble traveler, meaning that it doesn't need the transportation services of the LDL container. The non-sulfated vitamin D3 version coming from a supplement or even from food has to use LDL cholesterol to get around. So that's not a good thing. What the research shows is that vitamin D3 supplements will increase your levels of vitamin D3, but apparently they don't do anything to positively impact the diseases and the disorders that have been associated with vitamin D deficiency. Yeah, so that's not a good thing because there's so many people right now taking those supplements thinking that they are going to be safe from all of the things that could be caused by a vitamin D3 deficiency. And apparently that's not really the case. And it kind of makes sense because, again, the natural way is probably almost always going to be the right way. Don't misunderstand me. I do use a lot of supplements, but this one didn't work, and I think now I understand why. So, looking at the slide on supplementation, to summarize, in a nutshell, it doesn't work to supplement with vitamin D3, even though it does raise vitamin D3 levels. It may have no effect on the disorders associated with vitamin D deficiency, according to the research, and that study is quoted there on the slide. So you may want to check. Now, there's another thing that's out there, and that's vitamin D2. And that is very frustrating as well, because vitamin D2 is the plant form, and it works in a way that's similar to the supplemental vitamin D3, as it can't be sulfated either. But it's even worse than the vitamin D3 because it actually appears to block the absorption of vitamin D3. So D2 is what they use to fortify milk. No, actually, they use it. It's in everything. It is literally, they put vitamin D in everything, orange juice, milk, because they took the good stuff out. By the way, if you drink raw, grass-fed milk, you can get vitamin D3 sulfate naturally. This appears to be the only food source of vitamin D3. Of course, you all know I own part of a cow, and I drink raw milk, raw butter, and use raw cream to make my amazing gelato ice cream. Gelato is an ice cream, and this makes me feel really good. I mean, I already felt really good because I love the taste of it, and I know it's really good for me, but this makes me feel even better to find out that it is the only source of vitamin D3 sulfate. How cool is that, right? In any case, back to the vitamin D2. Not good. Very, very bad. Actually prevents us from absorbing vitamin D3 sulfate when it is available. So if you're drinking fortified milk, stop. Because if you lay out in the sun and you're trying to get the vitamin D3 sulfate, it's counterproductive if you are drinking fortified milk. You shouldn't be drinking fortified milk. You should be drinking whole milk. You should be drinking preferably 100% grass-fed milk. And if at all possible, if you can do it in your part of, in your neck of the woods, get raw milk. For those of you who live in states where it's legal to get raw milk, you're so lucky. We have to join a cow herd here and buy part of a cow. Still worth it, though. Okay, so what we're looking at here is we've talked a lot about, or I've talked a lot about Trevor Marshall's work, in which he points out that supplementing with vitamin D2 and even vitamin D3 supplements downregulates and interferes with the BDR receptors. I think he probably is onto something there. Unfortunately, he loses me after that because he recommends avoiding all sources of vitamin D, including the sun. And yeah, that doesn't seem right. That's not right. Because the solution, to cut to the chase, is you can protect yourself from cerebral and cardiovascular disease, as well as many other illnesses, apparently, by spending up to a half an hour in the sun. Or you can get a UVB, not a UVB, not a UVA, not a UVA and B, just a UVB sun lamp. That only takes several minutes a day. We'll talk a little bit more about that in just a minute and how you use them. But we get cholesterol sulfate when the skin is exposed to sunlight, to summarize, or UVB light. Recall that vitamin D is not really a vitamin, but a hormone, and that has become deficient in most Americans, not coincidentally, for the past 25 years. We've been avoiding the sun like the plague. Ergo, less sun, less cholesterol sulfate, less vitamin D3 sulfate, and more chronic illness. So the chart below in this next slide tells us that raising vitamin D, I should say raising vitamin D3 to 50 milligrams does the following things in terms of these diseases. It reduces rickets by 100%, osteomalacia, cancers by 75%, breast cancer by 50%, colon cancer by 67%, kidney cancer, endometrial cancer, type 1 diabetes reduced by 80% by raising vitamin D3 cholesterol, vitamin D3 sulfate. 80%, type 1 diabetes, type 2 diabetes, 50%. You aren't going to have as many fractures. Women aren't going to fall as often. And so on and so forth. I mean, like amazing things that might change if people understood what they need to do. I find this to be so incredibly exciting. And yet, so what if all the problems associated with vitamin D3 deficiency are actually caused by a cholesterol sulfate deficiency? Because first, you get the cholesterol sulfate, and then you get the vitamin D3. It doesn't really matter which, because they are formed in the skin at the same time. It's part of the same process. But we might have been looking under the wrong rock. And thank heaven for researchers like Dr. Seneff, who have pointed us in the right direction. As far as I'm concerned, she saved my life. And I'm going to tell her that on the show next week. All right. Pardon me. The role of cholesterol sulfate in plaque formation. Throughout my work, I have talked about the role that damaged or polluted foods play in the declining health of Americans. It turns out that the lack of cholesterol sulfate, combined with the body's attempt to manage damage from microbes, free radicals, toxins, excess glucose, may be what actually causes plaque to build up in the arteries, not an excess of cholesterol. or even foods that contain cholesterol. Cholesterol is good for it. According to Dr. Stephanie Seneff, the plaque is an attempt by the immune system to save the damaged lipoproteins, to refurbish them, and to send them to the heart. Remember, the heart does not beat without cholesterol sulfate. HDL has been dubbed the good guy because it brings cholesterol back to the liver. But according to Dr. Seneff, the real reason that HDL is so good for us is that it delivers the cholesterol sulfate to the heart. As long as there's enough sulfate, HDLs will turn the cholesterol into cholesterol sulfate and the heart is good. But what happens when there's not enough cholesterol sulfate? When it's not available, the body employs another mechanism to increase it. And again, we said that it has to use the damaged LDL and it turns it into plaque. The beneficial HDL cholesterol can be separated out through a process involving homocysteine, since homocysteine is a source of sulfate. The cholesterol sulfate needed by the heart and the brain is then available. However, there's a side effect for this cure. And again, this cure is only needed if there's not any cholesterol sulfate, which would come from sun shining on the skin. But barring that, and since that's not happening for most of us, it has to turn to homocysteine, which is a source of sulfate. However, the problem is that the homocysteine oxidizes cholesterol. That's one of those new forms of cholesterol that we talked about last week, oxycholesterol. It's a very dangerous form of cholesterol. And the process itself causes more plaque buildup. So while homocysteine kind of comes to the rescue in the sense that it allows the body to make the cholesterol sulfate, there's a cost. And the cost is that it causes an oxycholesterol in the process, which induces plaque buildup. Okay, this is kind of like, this reminds me of leaky gut. In fact, it's a lot like leaky gut. When blood becomes deficient in sulfates, it loses its negative charge. And the negative charge is important because it keeps the cells in suspension. Without the negative charge, the sticky protective part of the cell, which we call the glycocalyx, becomes more permeable. And gaps develop that allow blood to seep into the tissues, just like we saw the gaps in the gut. So gaps develop that allow the blood to seep into the tissues, and blood clots form to plug the hole. Eventually, the clot blocks the artery and leads to cerebral or coronary vascular disease. So the negative charge that the cholesterol provides keeps the cells in suspension. Without it, the sticky part of the cell gets permeable. Literally, cholesterol is the glue that holds us together. Literally. All right. So, what does your doctor recommend? If your doctor's like my doctor, she recommends statins. Statins to the rescue, right? Wrong. Wrong. Looking at this next slide, slide number 32. Conventional medicine dictates the use of statins to lower LDL cholesterol. Indeed, statins are the number one prescribed medication in the U.S., but the chart below demonstrates what has happened since people started taking statins. I don't know about you, but this doesn't look good to me. If you're understanding what the chart says, it is saying that the prevalence of coronary heart, congestive heart failure is rising. And the upper line is with statins, and the lower line was what was happening in the 20 years before we had statins. So we have from 1988 to 1991, then we have before that from 1976 to 1980. And in the same age groups, we see a significant difference for those who, a really big difference for those who are 75 years of age. But even beginning with 45-year-olds, if you look at the other end of the spectrum, even beginning with 45-year-olds with statin, more people are dying. Without statins, fewer people are dying, and then it just keeps getting worse the older you get. So statins clearly are not the answer. There's actually no research that shows that statins prolong life. If you listen to the company's commercials that make the statin medications, they don't say that you're going to live longer. They say that your LDL cholesterol is going to go down. And of course, people assume that means that you're going to live longer, but it doesn't. What they do is they lower the LDL. So what the statins do is lower the LDL cholesterol in the short term, and they even can prevent minor heart attacks in the short term. However, they deplete the heart muscle, they damage the brain, they damage the liver and joints, and eventually there just isn't enough sulfur, and the individual is much more at risk for a catastrophic heart attack. So the solution is let the sun shine. And and also there are some foods with sulfur that we can eat more of, but basically the sun is the key. This is just such an elegant and simple solution. Just get more sun. Now, sun is damaging, so we don't want you to get too much sun. Most people only need about a half an hour to get 10,000 IU. The exception would be people with dark skin. They have melanin in their skin, and that protects them from the skin from the sun. So it may take them longer. And unfortunately, there aren't really good statistics right now on how long we should all be laying in the sun. A rule of thumb for fair-complected people, pardon me, and Caucasians is about until your skin begins to turn pink. If you are dark-complected, you will need to experiment more. Everybody should experiment, by the way, but you may need to experiment more because of the melanin in your skin. It may take more exposure to the sun for you to get the vitamin D levels that you need to get. According to Dr. Seneff, there's a complete inverse relationship between sunlight and cardiovascular disease. The more sunlight, the less cardiovascular disease. In a study involving 16,500 people, researchers looked at weather statistics and found a 60% increased risk of stroke for those with the lowest sun exposure. In another study, 38,472 women were selected from 1991 to 1992, aged 30 to 49. They were monitored for 15 years, looking at the frequency of sunbathing, vacations, and even sunburn. The researchers found that increased sunburn frequency was associated with reduced all-cause mortality. Yes, the more they sunbathed, the less they died, even if they got burnt. Don't get burned, though. Burning is not good. It's not pretty. It's damaging, and it can lead to cancer. But we're not talking about burning. We're talking about just getting a little bit of sunshine. Sunbathing vacations, more than once a year also reduced risk to cardiovascular disease and mortality. I mean, just take a vacation and lay out in the sun, which is amazing. Interestingly, this corresponds with a 30-fold increase in the use of sunscreen over that same period of time. All right. If you want that resource, just email me and I'll give you the citation on that because it's not on your slide. All right. So there are also some food sources of sulfur. It turns out that the foods highest in cholesterol are also highest in sulfur. A coincidence, right? I've said it once and I'll say it again. We are designed perfectly. If only we could just resist the urge to improve on that design. Of course, many of the so-called improvements are driven by the desire to take shortcuts, while many others are driven by pure greed. But don't get me started on that. Let's just get back to what we can do. So all animal proteins contain plenty of methionine and cysteine, which are the two sulfur-containing amino acids. The best sources are pastured organic eggs, liver from grass-fed beef. So I have to stop a second. I do bone broth, of course, and I threw some grass-fed beef liver in my bone broth last time I made it. And I don't like liver. I've never liked liver. This was absolutely delicious. I loved it. I went ahead and made a liver pate out of it with organic homemade mayonnaise and a little bit of organic pastured chopped egg and a little bit of onion, and it was absolutely divine. I loved it. So I'm going to do that again the next time I make some bone broth. Anyway, pastured organic egg, liver from grass-fed beef, wild-caught fish and shellfish, and the inner organs of grass-fed animals. Coconut oil and olive oil also contain sulfur, and these are ideal sources of healthy saturated fats as well. As mentioned earlier, the only food that contains cholesterol sulfate naturally is raw milk. The only sulfonated amino acid is taurine, and fish and shellfish contain a lot of taurine, probably the most in terms of where we can get them in food, which the body needs a lot of when it's under stress or if there is any kind of intoxication. All right. If you are a vegan, your best choice is garlic, onion, cabbage, and sauerkraut. But you're still not getting the badly needed cholesterol and the CLA or conjugated linoleic acid that you need. All right, my favorite source of sulfur besides the sun is bone broth. When the bones simmer for days, the way I make bone broth, I usually simmer it for 4 or 5 days. It's really rich in various forms of sulfate, including chondroitin sulfate, glucosamine sulfate, and these are really great, especially if you've got any issues with joint or muscle soreness. These are great. There's so many good things that bone broth does. I don't know where to start, and maybe this is one of the reasons why bone broth is so good for us. I've often wondered what it was that made it so good. So how much sun? It really depends on your skin color, genetics, time of day, and where you are in relation to the equator. If you're light complexioned, as I mentioned earlier, especially if you're fair, less is more. Stay only long enough for your skin to turn pink in order to avoid skin damage. If you're dark skinned, higher levels of melanin protect you better from skin damage. However, you may have to spend more time in the sun to convert the necessary vitamin D into cholesterol sulfate. I recommend that you experiment. Put a little patch on your skin, and anybody could do this, put a little patch on your skin to see how much sun you are getting, and then regularly have your vitamin D3 levels checked to see if you are getting an increase in your vitamin D3 levels. This is another aha I had. I've never heard anybody mention this, but we all started out at the equator and we all had dark skin. And the farther away we got from the equator, as we evolved, the lighter our skin became and the less melanin we needed to protect us against UVB. Today in the U.S., people of color have significantly higher rates of cancer. Although the rates have dropped for cancer, they did drop in 2013, and heart disease. In fact, in general, African Americans have higher rates of many diseases than their Caucasian counterparts. What if the reason for this is that they haven't evolved fast enough for the exposure, for the limited exposure they get in a temperate climate, and that is contributing to the increased levels of diseases. I haven't read that anywhere. Not that somebody hasn't said it. I did look to see if anybody had said that to try to substantiate my theory, but I couldn't find anything. So if you happen to be out there and you find some research in that area, let me know. But in general, a rule of thumb is to stay only in the sun long enough for your skin to change by a shade to darken slightly. And I would say the same thing for someone of color. It may take more than just to darken slightly, though, because the melanin in your skin is going to protect you from the oxidative process that causes the vitamin D to go up. So you may have to stay longer. And the only way I know you can figure that out is just to test and have your vitamin D levels regularly tested. Another way to get limited amounts of sulfur through the skin is Epsom salts. I use them as an exfoliant. I also take baths in them. They're really calming. Dr. Ron's Ultra Pure makes an MSG line of body products, including shampoos and body lotions. Find those to be very soothing and very helpful. I have an MSM or a magnesium sulfate spray that I use every night before I go to bed because it really relaxes you. We've also talked about the dangers of eating foods that are not organic. Well, here's another really good reason: glyphosate. One of the most dangerous herbicides is glyphosate, and it's used on almost all conventional and genetically engineered foods. There's a great deal of data on the dangers of glyphosate, but according to Dr. Stephanie Seneff, glyphosate is also a major problem because it interferes with the enzymes responsible for activating vitamin D in the liver and kidneys. Remember we said it had to go there and get activated? She says glyphosate disrupts cytochrome P450 enzymes, which activate vitamin D. In addition, according to Dr. Seneff, the formation of cholesterol sulfate is also disrupted by glyphosate. So without getting too technical, if you ingest too much glyphosate, the red blood cells fall apart because they've lost their cholesterol sulfate. Remember we said it holds us together. It keeps the cells in suspension and allows them to stay sticky and therefore stay together. Well, the glyphosate disrupt that process and they literally fall apart. So eat clean, go organic. It's important. It's not a luxury. Okay, homocysteine. We talked about it earlier and we said that high homocysteine levels is another watch out for us. It's hardly ever discussed, and it's really important in terms of vascular disease. Heart attack, stroke, deep vein thrombosis, rheumatoid arthritis, osteoporosis, Alzheimer's, all of these things are related to homocysteine levels, and yet I don't hear anybody talking about it. And you know what? There's a good reason for that. Nobody talks about it because there's no medication for it. So the drug companies aren't going to really try to clue us in about how important homocysteine levels are, but they're important. So in this next slide, you can see where your level should be and who's at risk and who's not at risk. So when you have your blood work done, ask for your homocysteine levels to be checked. They probably are checked, and you probably do have your homocysteine levels. A lot of times they are normally checked, but nobody really talks to you about what it means when they're high. I know nobody did for me, and mine were high. I am expecting my homocysteine levels to go down because my body's getting plenty of cholesterol sulfate now, and I'm guessing my homocysteine levels will go down. However, that's something I can't wait to ask Dr. Seneff about next week. Okay, so the things that you need to eat in order to get your homocysteine levels up are in the next slide. You need to supplement with folate, B2, B12, B6, zinc, and TMG, or trimethylglycine. Also, the lowering homocysteine levels involve cutting way back on caffeinated drinks, no more coffee. I have found that green tea makes me just as happy with a lot less caffeine than the coffee did, and I'm actually really enjoying it. Cut way back on alcohol, processed foods, obviously, especially if they're not organic, but processed foods in general. Use sea salt, and when you're using sugar, use xylitol. I'm going to do a whole show on xylitol, so get ready for that. Okay, and last but not least, we have high fructose corn syrup or any kind of sugar, because something that a lot of people are not aware of is that the liver turns fructose into fat. The liver's job is to make cholesterol. It's a very complex process. It involves 25 to 30 steps. When it has to stop and turn fructose into fat, it really hampers its ability to make cholesterol. That's why eating too much sugar or too many processed foods, which are loaded with high fructose corn syrup, is going to cause your cholesterol to go up, especially your LDL cholesterol. So there are two things you can do. Avoid processed foods and substitute xylitol when you do need something sweet. So, in summary, to review, it's the microbes, toxins, free radicals, high levels of glucose that damage the LDL, along with high levels of homocysteine that damage the arteries, and herbicides like glyphosate that block vitamin D3 and cholesterol sulfate from activating, combined with a lack of cholesterol sulfate and a lack of vitamin D3 sulfate that leads to illness, especially vascular disease. In a nutshell, the alleged benefits of vitamin D3 sulfate are also benefits of cholesterol sulfate, i.e. they protect against cancer, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and improved immune function. To stay healthy, get plenty of dietary sulfur, get regulated sun exposure, eat good fats, reduce your homocysteine levels by supplementing and avoiding foods that raise them, avoid herbicides like glyphosate by eating clean, and get lots of rest. And that brings us to the end of this program. Please let me know how you like this information and whether it was helpful to you or not. submit your questions to us. Of course, go to the website, eatingdisorderpro.com. Like us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. And as usual, commit to be fit, eat clean, and live your life wisely.